listening to the Jays Journal Podcast for Sunday, July the 16th. He's a contributor with Sportsnet, and you know him on Twitter as Dow of Steeb, one of the original and most influential writers on all things Blue Jays baseball across the country. He'll be joining me for an exclusive where we talk about these Toronto Blue Jays. And, well, quite frankly, I don't know what to say. There's a very good chance that if you're listening to my voice and enjoying this podcast, you're already aware of what happened in Detroit as the Blue Jays struggled mightily against the Tigers this weekend and ended up losing in extra innings, 6-5 in the bottom of the 11th, a walk to Miguel Cabrera from Lucas Harrell to Miguel Montero. I don't even know where to begin on how to respond to that sequence of words all thrown together. It's not pretty. Gibby found himself having to juggle the bullpen using his best pitchers early and once again was outlasted by a team on the road that 2 days earlier had a closed-door team meeting in an effort to try to rejuvenate their season. Well, mission accomplished at the expense of the Blue Jays. For Toronto now, this means having to regroup and get ready to face the Boston Red Sox, which is the worst kind of reward ever. Not that they're deserving of a reward per se, but it's not a good situation where you're going to be facing now a team that is playing well and is essentially a team that can completely knock out your entire season if you get swept. Following that, they're going to hit Cleveland to see Mr. Edwin after all this time in his new park. And needless to say, it doesn't get easier for the Toronto Blue Jays. So wins are absolutely crucial. The team once again finds itself facing the scorn of fans, but there are many who still understand that there is time left in the season, and that if a team simply runs off a week or two of excellent baseball, it's amazing how quickly the season can change. But it's also at this point where I begin to sound like a broken record. So, rather than bore you, I'm going to bring on my exclusive guest, Dow of Steeb. Judgment after judgment after judgment. And this is one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show, because I want to ask you point blank, in the least obtuse ways, your impression of this 2017 team, literally to date, with this terrible extra innings loss, and how it compares to previous years. And I know, Dow, that you've watched the Jays for a very, very long time. So give me your take. What's going on? What are your thoughts on this team?
Yeah, well, you know, this is not a fun team to watch at this point, you know, and this is a team that I think, you know, it's not just the fact that they've lost, but they don't especially look good at it. It's not like you're watching them and saying, oh, it's a lot of heartbreak, and oh, it's so close, and maybe a few bounces here, a few bounces there. They're a team that just does not look really great at the plate. They look slow on the base paths. The middle of the bullpen, and the middle of bullpens are always sort of mushy and dodgy. But you know, this is a team that just hasn't been a real fun hang this year. And so I don't know. I guess I've been dreaming about the ways in which this team could have been better, and that's not typical of me to start to think about what could be or what could have been. But you know, it's an old team that's reaching kind of the end of a cycle, and you know, you can look and see that there's some reasons for optimism for 2019 and 2020 and 2021, but somehow they've got to get through this season and next season and see whether or not if they can remain somewhat competitive.
Well, from a baseball perspective, knowing what's involved to go from one generation of a team to another, I think you'll agree we always want that process to be as painless as it possibly could. But then if we think about it, in order for the next generation to happen, there has to be a certain threshold of fans expecting that this team is going to just stop competing for an indeterminate amount of time. Is that a fair point? do they have to start losing badly for people to appreciate that one day they can win again? Or can you plug up these holes and address the fact that it's been an underachieving team for most of the year and hope maybe that they can recover?
You know, I think that they can probably go through a short period of not being competitive. And I would say that potentially that's the remainder of this season. And if they were to choose to start sending guys out, now, mind you, the guys who they would have had the opportunity to send out aren't playing well enough maybe at this point to create enough value for themselves. But, you know, I don't feel like the 3-year tear it down model is something that the Blue Jays are going to need to do in the same way that, say, the Astros did. Because the Astros, when they were getting to the end of their cycle, I mean, they were a really bad team in the last years of their kind of veteran cycle where they did tear it down. And, you know, they I think, had more profound issues. You know, the Jays still have Roberto Osuna, and they have Marcus Stroman, and they have Aaron Sanchez. And so, you know, I mean, those are building blocks. Those are pieces that you can build on. They've still got another year of control of Josh Donaldson. You know, like there's ways for them to be a good team, but I think that there are a couple of points on the roster here where they it's time for something new to be cycled into that place. Yeah,
it is fascinating, isn't it, to look back and maybe highlight the exact moment where something that should have progressed a certain way with a certain destiny just fell off into a completely alternative reality. And I'm thinking of the blueprint that was the Anthopoulos teams, you know, his era, the things that he tried to accomplish with the promise of 5-year plans. And, you know, the poor guy always tried his best. I never fault Anthopoulos. I don't know how you feel, but I've never faulted him for the effort he made. And even though it's easy to criticize the way that he threw away the assets, and boy, did he throw away a lot of assets that we sure could use right now with today's team and the way that they bridge the farm team. But when you look back and you see all the things he did, you ask yourself what would have happened if he just stayed the course, if Rogers had not installed a Shapiro-Atkins GM front or United front office, and then maybe continued with a president who had a blank check policy and a GM who was willing to spend up to his credit limit?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I wonder how much difference there would be between, you know, what the current regime has done and what Anthopoulos might have done in the same instance. And, you know, I mean, it is interesting that you know, for 2015 and 2016, it was fine to say, trade every prospect, who needs them, you know, flags fly forever and we want to go. But, you know, this is where the rent comes due on some of those moves. And, you know, having said that, I mean, there's a limited number of those guys who were sent out in 2015 who I think would really make a significant impact on this team at this point. I don't think there's any sort of obvious, like, Jeff Bagwell type trade regrets that they have. And, you know, like, I wouldn't do 2015 or 2016 over again. Like, those are, they were both fun runs, and it was fun to see them really push in. I mean, that was the thing with Anthopoulos, was that he kept pushing in, and at a certain point, you were kind of looking at it like, you know, how many times can you go all in and bust out and still stay at the table? And so somehow he managed to. But, you know, it's not fun to go through that period of not being competitive. But if the Blue Jays are already down this year towards the bottom of the standings, and you know, what they're kind of chasing is a ghost of a chance at the second wild card, you know, I just think it's probably time to make as good a use of this time as they can and see who is worth investing in the system. And you know, that's why I like the idea of potentially bringing up, say, an Anthony Alford for the last couple of months, not just in September, but to start to get him in as soon as he's healthy enough to be a regular again. Just because why not give him the opportunity to get the major league experience, or Dwight Smith, or you know, whoever it is, just to kind of see what you've got and give them some seasoning. I know that was always Earl Weaver's point of view, was, you know, you develop these guys, you develop them in the major leagues. Although I think that was more of something where he talked about pitchers, and that's actually, frankly, the spot where the Blue Jays right now, they just don't have, I think, necessarily much in terms of pitching in the system that's ready to come up and contribute at this point.
No, absolutely. And then that's a byproduct of patterns of spending and going all in and having an unlimited bankroll from, you know, a president that was willing to be open-minded enough to give him a chance to pretty much keep his job, because we both know that he would have been let go if not for being able to demonstrate that during his tenure some kind of success came out of it, and it did. At what price will be debated on for a long time. But I'm wondering, you know, you've seen these transitory periods. Transitions aren't a stranger to either of us in following this team for decades. And we know some look better than others. And there have been false starts, right? I mean, we think about players like Carlos Delgado or Roy Halladay, you know, a lot of excitement when they first came up. One almost had a no-hitter. The other one, I think, hit like 13 home runs in his first 27 games. And then next thing you know, they're down in the minors and it's a long road. When you look at the future a year or two from now, when you consider the minor league system as you know it and all the hype surrounding Bo Bichette and Vlad Guerrero Jr., is that a legitimate reason, in your opinion, for every fan to basically be saying we can't wait for baseball in 2019, or is it also maybe a little bit premature?
Well, I don't know how premature it is. I mean, you know, I think really high-end players have been making their debuts at, you know, 20, 21, 22. I think that it wouldn't be unreasonable to expect that Bichette and Vladdy could potentially be 2019 regulars, which still gives you one season in between, I guess, to sort out. And look, there's all sorts of things that can happen. You know, guys foul a ball off their foot, or they break a hamate bone, or whatever it is, and they're never quite the same. But I think the other thing that's different now, as opposed to some of those Jays teams in between 93 and 2015, is that, you know, there were teams in that span that we would have thought about very differently if there had been a wild card or a second wild card. Because there were some of those teams that I think probably would have had a different narrative around them. They would have been right there in the competition, and so the existence of that wild card structure kind of means that you can have success and be moving upwards at the same time. So I don't think that there necessarily needs to be a several year tear down and rebuild. I think that they can probably retool. But I do think that there are guys that are on the roster right now who probably don't lend themselves to being part of that retool. Two guys who I would pick on would be Steve Pierce and Kendrys Morales. And they're veteran hitters and they have something to offer, but in terms of a team sort of emerging out of this, I don't see those as the sort of guys who you hang on to in order to just give, I don't know, just to give 450 to 600 at-bats to stay afloat.
Especially knowing, too, that at least with Morales, it's contract-friendly. You'd like to think that there'd be some team interested in taking a still above-average designated hitter making, you know, $11 million. So, I mean, the organization gets some credit from me in how they were able to build a team that they thought could get it done this year. Because, you know, at the end of the day, we're talking about a group of underachievers, terrible, terrible underachievers. I mean, the only – would you agree that the only player right now on the roster is overachieving is Justin Smoke?
Yeah, I mean, the only one who's clearly overachieving, I would say. And there are some guys who I think are achieving exactly at the level that we should expect, and maybe that's the problem. You know, like I look at both Darwin Barney and Ryan Goins, and I kind of it's not to say that Jason Leblebe, I've been nailing that name
too.
So
I
well
do
up
too.
Until right now.
I'm impressed you got as far as you did.
Yeah, Leblebesian. There you
it's
go. It's not to say that he is the great answer to what ails this team, and he probably isn't, in the future, but I don't think that Goins has been especially good with the glove even this year, and he's been exactly what Ryan Goins is with the bat. And this is coming from someone who I think very early in the season was ready to give Ryan Goins the benefit of the doubt. I saw that he had taken a hitch out of his swing. I thought maybe this is the thing. Maybe this turns him into a guy who can hover around a 700 OPS. But it's just, I think it's about moving on from certain players, and while at the same time recognizing that you still need to have a roster that's filled with guys who can hang in the big leagues, and that's easier said than done, I suppose. Some of those roster spots down between 20 and 25 where you're talking about bench guys and middle relievers, that's always a bit of a moving target.
Having said this, let's do a quick time travel to 2019, and I'm going to ask you your opinion. I'll tell you what I think initially, and then maybe you'll tell me if I'm wrong. But when you look at this roster the way it is right now, that's a lot of players that will not be around come 2019. I mean, I'm thinking of the starters right now, the way that they were laid out before Liriano got hurt. Now it looks like, once again, it's going to be four of the five amigos. And I'm looking at the bullpen, and I'm looking at some of the temporary stopgap measures, including pitchers that were in this game that normally would not have been in this game. And I'm looking at some of the position players and contracts they might want to rid themselves of. Which players do you think... will this team survive what will effectively be a purge of players, or do you see them maybe keeping together as much of it as possible and just dealing with the high priority pieces and letting it ride so that the kids can prove themselves?
I think that they're sort of in a situation where they have to try and keep as much of it together as possible, just because in terms of high end players, there's not a lot that's out on the market in the next couple of years. And yeah, there's a year where it's, you know, Machado and Bryce Harper and whatnot. And if you kind of assume that that's the game that they, that's a game that they might not be playing, there's not a lot of other depth in there. So, I mean, I really do think that Stroman and Sanchez and Osuna are going to end up being the sort of cornerstones going forward. But there was a time when the cornerstones of the Blue Jays were going to be Halliday, Carpenter, and Escobar. And actually, those three guys ended up having really pretty successful MLB careers in the end, but just not necessarily all of them in Toronto. Ultimately, none of them in Toronto.
Well, and the treatment, too. We remember that in the case of Escobar, I don't feel he was ever fully embraced. either by the fan base or the team. And I think he had significantly better success when he wasn't a Blue Jay. I remember him having a couple of years, and I think it was the National League. Where did he go? Do you remember which team?
No, he went to Anaheim afterwards.
Oh,
and the Blue Jays.
That's right.
And actually, it's funny because I can't remember if I've actually written this up or if I've or if I've just been sitting on it for a while. But it's the idea that the Blue Jays are getting close to making the same mistake with Roberto Osuna that they did mm-hmm. with Kelvin Escobar, which was that with Escobar, they kept it was really easy for them to throw him back into the closer role when that's what the organization's needs were, as opposed to what was going to serve the player best and how the player could sort of grow. And they would focus on short-term needs for the team. And so that's how, you know, Escobar kind of got
yeah.
yanked back and forth. And I think only in one season was he. Yeah, I think only in one season was he ever really like a full-time starter with the Blue Jays, and then went and had a, you know, a bunch of 3 to 4 win seasons in Anaheim subsequently. So it'll be interesting. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I was just going to say it'll be interesting to see what they choose to do with Osuna, because again, Osuna ended up in the bullpen because the short-term need of the team was that they needed a back-end bullpen arm, they needed a closer, and Osuna ended up there, and he's excelled. But is that how they're going to maximize their investment and their time that they have with him? And you know, there were stories that he liked the closer role and wanted to stick there, and I think
yeah.
I've heard subsequently people whispers saying that no, he's open to the starter role. So we'll see.
Well, I don't know how much stock I'm going to put into this front office and their ability to interface effectively with their players. When Osuna comes out and makes those comments a few weeks earlier, and I had Arden Zwelling on my show, who actually was the one, if you recall, who broke the whole Osuna mental health story. And I remember thinking to myself that was a real wake-up call, because clearly every front office of every franchise deals with their athletes in completely different ways to try and be successful. And we know that no two organizations are run the same way. And it's, you know, amazing that you mentioned that Escobar perspective, because it has a lot of similarities with what's happening with Osuna, I think. And, you know, I mentioned my disdain for what happened in the way that Halliday and Carpenter were treated as well. Those were organizational decisions. Both players were talented pitchers. Both players were handled in different ways, and both pitchers ended up having real success when they were no longer with the team. You know, the real stuff isn't being in the playoffs, the stuff that should matter, not the statistics, but actually being there. And I hope that this organization will do their best to make sure that they have players who are in the right roles to succeed and are ready to do something to impress the fans. Because I just find too often from watching this group now, I find it hard to believe that so many quality players could all be having years of regression and underachieving this long in a baseball season. Because I don't know about
yeah.
you, Dow, but I thought the tide would have turned for some of these players. I mean, you and I watched the game today. You and I gnashed our teeth and furrowed our brows today. I don't know what's going on to Lewitsky at this point. Apparently, Colorado seems like they're the most brilliant organization on the planet, and offloading him, because it's astonishing to witness this kind of pedigree collectively struggle this badly.
Yeah, no, you know, I think a line that I always come back to when talking about baseball is nobody knows nothing about baseball. And, and you know, there are these moments. It's funny because we're talking about Blue Jays history, and I think that there's an interesting idea of the Blue Jays really, they were good developers of talent, but not always good utilizers of talent. And I think that if you take a look at how Cito used to manage the team, and Gare Joyce has a really good piece about Sean Green somewhere on the Sportsnet site. I'm sure if you were, you can find that on there. But, you know, I think back to Sean Green, who in some ways gets overlooked as one of the great Blue Jays, in part because he just wasn't utilized in the right way. And, you know, someone like Cito Gaston wanted to bench him in favor of Ruben Sierra. And why? Well, because Ruben Sierra was the veteran with the pedigree.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think Cito and Paul Beeston, who, you know, I think were always very close. And I think that Cito was Paul's, was Beeston's guru when it came to players, and Cito, I think at times had a hard time finding the value in kids he didn't know, but would always be able to point to, you know, the veterans and keep Joe Carter hitting fourth for forever. So, I think that we have a team right now that Cito Gaston would have loved. And I'm not sure that that's a great thing. And Troy Tulowitzki, I have struggled to try and understand. I think more so I've struggled to try and understand how he could have been so good based on what it is that I see from him right now. And, you know, like he has bad strike zone judgment. You know, he took a ball at the bottom of the strike zone today for strike three, and he turned and he gave the umpire guff about it. And I thought, that's a strike, dude. Like, and he argues calls that are clearly, I mean, at least as clear as the robot box that they throw up on the screen can be, but it certainly looks like it to me. And from my very cozy position here on the couch, but yeah, I struggle to understand, you know, how he had those great years, because he hasn't looked especially great as a Blue Jay.
No, he hasn't, and it's one of those stories that you'd hope would have a happy ending. I mean, he's got his own meta cheer. He's one of those players in baseball that in his prime transcended the sport, because not only was his name mentioned as one of the best players in every kind of poll, but he was getting it done at, you know, on both sides of the field at the same level of almost like Jeter-esque proportion, if you will, for a comparison of the player that he crossed over with. The messages I received when he was traded to Toronto were split right down the middle between many people who were thrilled that he was coming to Toronto and the other half that were convinced that Colorado knew something about him, which is why they broke that promise. You remember that the melodrama around the commitment that was given by the GM, and I kept thinking to myself, that's really strange. Why is that being played up really so much? I mean, that happens all the time in sports, right? Promises get broken all the time. And now I begin to realize that Colorado was insistent on getting rid of him, not just because they had in Trevor Story a great player in the, you know, prospect pool they can call upon, but I think you'll agree, Dow, they probably knew something we didn't, and now we're seeing the effects of that because it's absolutely inexplicable. Jonah Carey can only defend his split so much, and he's a champion. And I'll tell you, in his last appearance on The Fan, he was done. He said something really bad's going on. He's a negative WAR player. It's not looking good.
Yeah, and you know, one of the lessons I think that I've learned over the last, say, 5 to 10 years or whatever, but certainly in the last 5, is when you hear bad stuff about the guy who's coming to your team, you should pay it a little bit of heed. Because, you know, when, say, Yunel Escobar was coming to Toronto, and we were hearing from Atlanta what a bad dude he was, and we were like, oh, well, you know, that's just Atlanta, and they're all a bunch of rednecks and intolerant fools, and they couldn't possibly love and appreciate Escobar in the same way that we're going to, and, you know, give it 18 months and suddenly you're realizing, wow, maybe they had a point. And it's the same with Colby Rasmus, and it's, you know, it's the same with Tulowitzki. So, you know, I guess sometimes letting some of the negative perspectives at least into your head as part of your consideration is not the worst thing. I don't know. I feel like we're being really downer fans about this whole thing, but maybe it's just been a crappy season. If they were, if they had 60 wins at this point, I think we'd be just talking about how beautiful and awesome baseball is, and summer is amazing, and sunshine is great, and all of this sort of thing. But it's a sour season.
It's a line we straddle, I think, because I certainly don't like being negative or unrealistic in appreciating what's in front of me. I've always preached patience. I've been doing it now for, I think, 3 weeks. And, you know, I began this podcast to coincide with my desire to let people stay as open-minded as possible about this team. But as each week passes and I continue to speak with so many people either involved directly with the team, indirectly covering the team, it amazes me to see that the fans are losing hope. That the actual Blue Jays, good ship Blue Jays, is still on the high seas, and they're still trying to send all the messages that this will be a competitive year and we're not going to do strange things that you'll be uncomfortable with, like trade an MVP caliber player who's under control or get rid of a starter that can bring in prospects. I believe that. I think your assertion is spot on. They want to keep this team together. What's in store for us is my question for you. Like, how do you view the remainder of this road trip that's now started so poorly with a series that they should have won, or could have won? I shouldn't say should have won. Where do you see this team, say, a month and a half from now? And are you and I going to have conversations looking to the future, or still like this, philosophizing about the present?
Well, I mean, I think that they're slipping a little bit far down in the wild card race. And, you know, it's nothing that, say, 2 good weeks wouldn't take care of. And if they were to get onto a real hot streak, then maybe that would be the case. But, you know, I ultimately think that the upside of this season is still that second wild card. But the more realistic take, I think, is likely that this is going to be an unsuccessful year for them, and something that they can retool and retrench and whatnot. And so I think maybe, you know, in the last couple of months of the season, it's going to be to see, you know, what sort of game this team brings, and you know, are the players going to pull the chute on the season? You know, a couple of years ago, they weren't that far off, and they didn't do anything at the trade deadline. And afterwards, it really did feel like the team kind of pulled the chute on the 2014 season. And, you know, there's some of the same guys in the clubhouse who were here then. And so, I don't know. I think that it behooves the organization to get an understanding of what the culture of this team is. And, you know, I'm probably someone who would have been loath a couple of years ago to talk about culture or clubhouse culture or whatnot. But, you know, there's a line in business about how culture eats strategy for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And I think that, you know, depending on the mix of players or specific players or whatever it is, I think that they've got to kind of identify who's going to be leading this team going forward and who are the ones who are maybe dragging it down.
Wise words. That's a process that needs to be done in earnest to understand, you know, as the climate continues to change, and if they keep dropping games left, right, and center. I mean, you brought up a great retrospective of the 14, 15, 16 mindset But I don't remember there being these kinds of lopsided, demoralizing losses. I mean, this team has kind of excelled in that this year. I think they average on a, you know, once a week, they'll have the kind of game that for players in that clubhouse that are competitive and have the competitive juices flowing, it's got to be tough, don't you think, to have to take your lumps like that, especially when you're losing 19-1 on a Sunday or losing on Canada Day in front of 45,000 people?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I've been racking my brains as to, you know, what exactly is happening there. And I guess it is, you know, underscoring the fact that it is a weak bullpen, and they're just, you know, in a game where they get behind by 4 or 5, they can't help themselves from falling further behind to start to fall behind by, you know, 10 and 11. And I feel like that's the way that it has been playing this year. It's not a team hanging an 8-run inning in the first inning. It's teams getting a couple of runs up and then hanging the 6 or 7-run inning, you know, later on once they're into the bullpen. So it does have to be demoralizing for these guys, and especially I think, you know, for some of the guys who are into their 30s and are really looking at, I don't know if it's exactly chasing championships but I think that looking at the way that these games are playing out and the way the season is playing out, I'm sure it must be hard to show up for work some days for some of these guys.
Well, and it's also worth mentioning that we're talking about a group that is comprised of a lot of reclamation projects. These aren't guys who were elite players from the get-go and made the league at the age of 21. A lot of these players, like Bautista and Donaldson and Estrada, are players that, in the early stage of their careers, a lot of organizations had pretty much written them off for being utility or fringe. And then to become players who do accomplish something noteworthy, and they have. That's the thing. This team has on its roster some really, really impactful players at various stages in their career, whether it was, you know, winning an ERA title or whether it's, you know, holding runners to a 2.03 average or whether it's winning 20 games. I think that's what makes this so frustrating for Blue Jays fans. They look at the roster and they realize that, yes, the media is correct in saying the talent is there. The talent just needs to pick up the slack and start demonstrating exactly why they're given these delicious guaranteed contracts, right? Can imagine what life would be like if it were an NFL-style management of payroll.
I like the fact that teams have to take responsibility for the contracts that they sign. But I think you kind of alluded to Marco Estrada, and I think that is the one piece that is maybe the most frustrating and bewildering at this point. And, you know, today's starter, there's something that's not right with him. And mind you, he's a guy who has pitched when he was unhealthy for 2 years and pitched great when he was unhealthy and nursing his back and whatnot. Maybe his back is healthy and how he can't pitch well that he's healthy. I'm not sure what it is, but just if we had, if Marco Estrada was pitching like a number two playoff starter in the way that he has in the last couple of years, I think that this is a real different season. And
I agree.
And, you know, like 3 or 4 wins one way or another, and suddenly this whole season starts to look a little bit different. So. It shouldn't surprise us in some ways because, you know, they lost Sanchez. They lost Liriano for a period. Estrada hasn't quite looked right. They lost Hap for a month. Like, there's a lot of stuff that when we go back and we do the final tally, it'll make sense to us why the season ended up the way it did. But in the moment, it certainly doesn't make it any easier to sit through 3 hours of a game. And I guess today, more like 4 hours of a game and have it end in the way that it did.
It truly is gut-wrenching in that regard. But we talk about this all the time. It's baseball. Tomorrow is a new day. It's another game. There are still 69, I think, left in the schedule. So for all we know, it'll be Groundhog Day for you and I talking about this at least for the next few weeks. Because I think this team will just find a way to keep scuffling, to keep themselves at least on the radar. But at some point, the realization, I think, will sink in for everyone involved that this team is just not going to have to even whisper having any designs on the postseason, which, as frustrating as that is for someone like you and I who expected them to be maybe an 88, 89, 90 win team and compete for the wild card, you simply can't do that when your starters, the five guys that were so healthy last year and money in the bank, I think are combined 22 and 24. That those aren't contender numbers. First of all, you're nowhere near the magic number of 50 wins as a group to put you in that position. And secondly, you just can't stay healthy. I think Liriano is going to be shelved after today as well. So is that something they should wear? Is that a mulligan factor? Is that something they should wear as a reason for this year? Or will it simply obscure the fact that regardless of the injuries, players didn't perform when they needed to?
Yeah. Well, and going back to your point about what sort of team we thought that this might be coming into the season, you know, I thought that this was an 84 or 85 win team that, you know, if things played their way, then they could get themselves up to anywhere up to 90 wins, but maybe, you know, the 88 or 89 that would get them into the postseason. And, you know, instead they're maybe an 84 win team that lots of stuff is going wrong and they end up as a 78 win team. So, you know, it'll be funny to see how we can, how we, and when I say we, I guess I'm just talking about fans in general, but yeah, how people approach these last few months and whether or not I have a suspicion that the chase for 500 is going to end up being as much a narrative as anything, in the waning months of this season. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, and who knows, I joked a few weeks ago that the Blue Jays were going to end up 80 and 81 and having their last game of the season rained out. So that they would end one game under 500 for the year. That seems to me like the most appropriate end to this season. I certainly hope that that's not the case. I mean, October baseball is fun, and I'd love to spend the time this year watching the Blue Jays in October again. But I just have a feeling that might be what we're looking at down the stretch.
And considering everything that's happened this year, it would not surprise me in the least bit. If you really factor in all the shenanigans, the hijinks, the Murphy's Law opportunities for absolute silliness with this ball club, listen, the script isn't done yet. We've still got 2.5 months of baseball, but I've got a feeling that in some ways the best is still yet to come. We ain't seen nothing yet when it comes to what this Blue Jays baseball team is all about in 2017. Dow, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to chat with me this evening. Before I let you go, Jays Journal podcast is listened to by a lot of different demographics and all over the world. I want you to tell my listeners maybe what you're up to and how they can find you and what they need to know in terms of being able to reach you.
Thanks. The best place to reach me usually on an ongoing basis is on the Twitter machine. Dow of Steve is my Twitter, and that's where you'll find me spending excessive amounts of my time. And then every Friday I have a piece that runs on sportsnet.ca. So that's the other place where you'll find some of my writing. And aside from that, you know, I have to say that this year I've been doing a lot more writing than I had in the last couple of years. I think I've been a bit more sporadic, and I'm sticking to a very strict weekly schedule. So, and I'm hoping that that means that getting regular reps means that the writing is getting better, but I'll leave that up to the people to decide.
His name is Dow Steeb. You can find him on Sportsnet and on Twitter. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Ari.